Blog Talk Radio.
The Smith.
About America in pain, but the future is very bright. And I want you to keep that in mind. That's the title of our show tonight. This is Blog Talk Radio. I am Dr. Lorenzo D. Smith, the host, and we're just talking real to you. We're just going to talk about plain old life issues. And we know what's going on at this time in our world, and we want to share our thoughts about it. We want to just be able to just let you also share your thoughts by calling in. The call-in number is 347-857-4192. Press 1, and I'll make sure I get you on the chat line and you can talk with us. The web link to check out this show, if you just want to hear via internet, you can go to www.blogtalkradio.com/The Smith Way Production. And if you just not only just want to check it out and say, I'm going to check it out not tonight, maybe tomorrow night, you can go to that same web link and you can make it do what it do. Our email is talkingreal@gmail.com. And you also can tweet the show @TalkingRealToYou, @LorenzaBSmith15, @Coach_L_Smith. Now, let me take this opportunity to introduce those individuals as they call in and join us to play a part in America, America in pain, but the future is very bright. We have Hale from the state of Georgia, and she will be calling in. We look forward to talking with her as she gets a chance to do that. We call her Dr. O, and she shared wisdom with us from her field, and they are social work, so we're so happy to have her. That's Dr. Olivia E. Smith. Also joining us from the state of Alabama, in the central part of Alabama, Millennium, He calls in from time to time. He checks us out on Facebook, and that's so important where he's still a part of it. He's our expert, and he offers from the millennial side of point of view. That's Cameron Gilbert. Also, we have Hale from the state of South Carolina. So proud to have this young lady as a part of the team. And I know we have some challenging times. We have COVID-19 out there. And we want to give a shout-out to each one of those frontline workers, the healthcare individuals. Also give a shout-out to our mental health council, clinical licensed clinicians. I'm going to say it if I'm saying it right. Clinical individuals who work with you. And all those individuals, none other than a retired educator, administrator, also a very active member in her sorority, Zeta Pi Beta sorority, none other than Scarlett H. Black. Then we have the co-host that joins us from time to time. She's another millennial. It makes up the only father and daughter blog talk radio team in the country that bring you energetic conversation, none other than my daughter. So proud to have her on here. She'll be calling in. Lauren B. Smith, because she had an incident herself she want to talk about it. If she don't call in, I will make sure I talk about it, dealing with this kind of mental fear that we have now in regards to police brutality or the fear of the police. Also, this person is a special person. She's joined us, and she's been with our team fully as a co-host. It was really originally from the state of Ohio, up there in the Cleveland area. Had the pleasure to get away from that border of Canada and come all the way down to the inner Florida, where it's beautiful at Boca Raton, none other than our licensed clinical social worker, none other also as yoga instructor that works for young people as well as adults. None other than Lisa Levine. How you doing, Lisa?
Dr. Smith, how are you?
I am doing well. I am doing well. You know, I've been working hard to get your volume up so when you talk, you can be heard. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us. And the other team members will come in a minute. We're going to make sure we want you to be part of this. So I just want to keep in mind what we're going to focus on. We're on a little bit early, which is 30 minutes early tonight, America in Pain. And you know the pain that we're going through. We're dealing with COVID-19 that took over 110,000 lives here in America. Also, we have our fight for equality. We have protests going on all over the country, all over the world in regards to Black Lives Matter. So we're going to talk about that tonight to see the pain that's gripping us. However, we have to know with the thing we will offer and what other people are doing at this time will offer, there's a bright future ahead of us. It's really a bright future. We don't want this to be a fad. We want this to be continued on because we're going to offer some things from our point of view, and we're going to offer some things through your point of view by allowing you to call in. Again, the call-in number is 347-857-4192. Press 1, and we'll put you on the chat line and let you share your point of view, and I'll make sure I identify you so I know you're alive, let you know you're alive. I'll ask you to, once you press 1, I'll give the last 4 digits of your cell or telephone number and say, you're alive, give us your name, location, offer your comment. All right, Lisa, we can kind of move forward with what we intend on doing, and when the rest of the team members join in, they can offer their point of view. One of the things when we say America is in pain, we know it's a bright future, but we must begin to come up with some ways to correct some of the things in regards to happening in our social aspect. We call it social issues. First of all, we want to address police brutality, and we just want to see how we can offer our ideas about it, as well as get yours as well. And then we'll hopefully at the end be able to offer some form of solutions. And that's what it's all about. When we have things occurring, we have to have solutions that's sustainable. You know, one of the things I talk with several people when we talk about the social issue of police brutality, and the protests and everything, I just think that everybody should be held accountable. It doesn't matter what happened. You should be held accountable. For example, I take myself, a longtime educator. I retired. I would be held accountable because I work with children and to train them to be adults. So I should be held accountable. If you're walking around protecting and serving, you ought to be held accountable when you step outside of that zone. When you step out and take a life, whether it was recorded or not, you took a life, but God is, he works in mysterious ways. He made sure that was recorded. And here, the actuality of the murder being committed in front of millions of people because it did go viral. And he has to be held accountable. The other officers that stand there and applying the same pressure, but it didn't come in a direct area, are being held accountable. Even the person standing up there watching is held accountable. And this is what we said, the first step to attack police brutality is to hold them accountable, and don't be afraid of doing that, because this is not a military state. We're not in a country that military walks around. We're in a where we have law enforcement. And I want to just not focus on police, because we have to keep in mind all the legislation that's being offered, all the ideas coming out. It's not just going to affect one police department. It's going to affect all law enforcement. That's what we have to keep in mind. So, Lisa, share your thoughts in regards to that, even from a mental point of view, dealing with the police brutality and what we've been experiencing for the last 2 weeks. That it's been way off the chart, and it touched me personally. I'm going to tell you why it touched me personally, because as a black man in America, then have sons and have grandsons, to know they may be in line for that kind of fate, that bothers me, and if nothing can be done about it. No, this is not the first time. Ferguson wasn't the first time. They can go back all the way to I can take my own family back, and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to allow Lisa to jump in. I can take you to the 40s when I had a great uncle, to be lynched in Alabama, to be hung and castrated and left there. This happened in my family. If you ever travel to Montgomery, Alabama, and go to the Social Justice Initiative, you can go and see my family member name. Also, a marker on Highway 80 going to Selma, Alabama, leaving Montgomery, but in Lowndes County, Elmo Bolin, my family, my great-grandmother, brother. So it's been in my family a long time. I know everybody angry, but we have an anger in our stuff, but we won't change. Lisa, share your thoughts in regards to what.
I think what happened here, this has been going on for years and years. I think social media has brought this to light. So now we're videotaping and we're seeing more and more. And I think what happened recently.
Camera fail. Go ahead, Lisa. Go ahead. Okay.
Recently.
Keep on talking, Lisa.
First of all, that video is very disturbing, and it's circulating everywhere. And from some of the research I've been doing, I've been seeing a lot of other videos, not as extreme as that, but I think social media and and I think between COVID right now, between people being locked up, and I think just a lot of anger, and then anger. I mean, I've watched that video myself 3 times, and I find it's very upsetting, very unnecessary, and I think what's happened is people want change. And I think also what's happened, we're not always told all the information. I think that the media on TV is kind of like telling us only certain things, and, you know, it incites people. But my hope with this is this can bring people together and we make changes. I mean, when I've had several clients like happen, like, what can we do? What can we, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, what can we do? One, you can't change the way people think.
Nope.
You know, that's my first, you know, concern is what's going on when people are having, you know, reading the statistics, you know, and black men are 2.5 times more likely killed by the police. You know, there's a researching on, you know, what the statistics are amongst races. And you have to think, like, what's going on? There's a lot of profiling.
Yeah.
What's triggering them? Is it just, oh, maybe they got in trouble or they run somebody? You know, what's happened here? You know, where is this coming in with this aggression that we're finding? And I, you know, I know it's hard being a police officer. I'm sure I'm not going to take that away. However, the group we are starting,
around the ability to correctly, and one thing led to another, officers just like this, you're wondering, you know, so much,
how come no one
jumped on his feet? Sometimes people are just homicide for this year, they don't know how to do that, and they become silent and attentive. That's good to when we're trying to fight many of seeing it on video, and these kids are speaking, and we have to work with the group, start working together for us. And it's very
and another thing, and just a couple other things, because sometimes we have to take our personal experience to kind of relate really, really what has been going on for years after years. I think that when we're talking about police brutality, I think for years in the 20th century, when we wanted to keep people in line, we would use the police as the resource to do that. Because I know as a child growing up, being told, hey, you better do wrong, the police gonna come get you. And we try to start sending this fear into them at that age, when a young age, I'm talking about little, my generation and beyond, because I have heard that being said by some individuals now where their children are scared to death of the police because it's being used as a way to discipline them. And it was used that way when I was a child, and we saw the police, we ran from the police because you never want to get caught by the police because you know the consequences wasn't going to be nice. You know, and everybody be asking me, I say, I understand where you be coming from, but y'all don't understand where I've been. So if you understand where I've been, then you can know this is nothing that just all of a sudden just started. It's been happening years and we haven't been able to wrap our hands around it. We begin to get a feel of what we need to do now. You know, some things I start hearing that coming out from certain people, even when it first happened, I heard from people that I call them individuals that's top of the line. When people was asked that question, even myself, we don't know. We were saying we don't know. You know, we don't know how to deal with this situation. We just but begin to sit down and think. We start thinking, this is how we can deal with this. We have to hold people, first of all, I say, really, really accountable for their action. We cannot allow them to weasel out of something that they did, was they know was wrong, and they did it because of a military mindset. It's a militant mindset.
The other thing, too, I think this is about, I don't see the point of it being going on and watching TV. I always say the consequence of all that. To me, when you suspend an officer for his behavior, or you suspend him for putting him in the deed, why why aren't we investigating what's going on? Is there a missing person? Is there an error issue? Is there a CSP? Is there a problem? Is there something going on? We do something criminal for you, for boxes maybe, going to do volunteer work for community security, rather than trying to cut my head around to make change. And I think, well, we can't change the way we're going to do anything about this and shouldn't be without getting caught.
You know, and we have to be realistic about when we talk about anger management. We're in a whole new perimeter of things, and I don't protest and know a whole lot about that. But dealing with children, some people just have behavior disorders. You got to remember that, and it requires much more than saying he's just angry. Some people have those things. However, just to kind of piggyback what you were saying in regards to individuals getting disciplined action toward them and not putting in some kind of mechanism to offset them, to correct them. Now, if you can correct them and you see the hope of, but if there's no way to correct them, the only thing is to dismiss them. I'm going to be honest. I'm not going to play by that. But it's the same way as an administrator, as a principal of a high over a director of a program in the public school system. What they require is if somebody can't do it after you did all the corrections, you have to, you know, allow them to move on and find something else. But this individual or any individual in the Minneapolis Police Department that have 18 disciplinary actions against you, they allow to go too far. And you know that I just said, yes, he allowed to go too far. They allow him to go too far. And people have to be held accountable for that. And that's what I understand, that there's a lot of other individuals. And one thing I learned when I became what they call a contract principal, before we had principals that could earn tenure in the state of Alabama, you have, you know, 3 years, and after 3 years, your tenure take a little bit more, just something they call a little higher positive note and helping you perform your job without being threatened by individuals. But as a contract principal, you're on a contract that might be 2 years. But one thing about that, when you take on that responsibility as a contract, you're also held responsible for everybody you're supervising, every child that you're over, every parent that you deal with. And one of the things, I'm going to be held accountable for something happened, because I was told this, dealing with a situation, if somebody, a lunchroom staff person, no reflection on lunchroom, those people, manager, food manager. Okay, I see my son, he's on here, that's his field. He works the child nutrition, so there's no reflection. But if they take out a case or something, unless you can find out, we're going to hold you accountable. And I was the principal. I didn't take it, but I think the ball was dropped with this situation a while ago. To get to this point now, heads are beginning to fall when they probably should have failed a long time ago. But I also know they have changed leadership in the last year or so as the chief of police there. So there was a change made, but that's what it's going to continue to be, is a change. You got to be changes made. And in regards to coming up with ways of dealing with, as it, you know, we talk about federal legislation. We're talking about defunding. We're talking about demilitarizing those. All of that we're talking about, but we just don't talk about it. We have to go and put it in play and see if it's and make it work the best we can. So it's important that we do that. You know, we can get as angry, and one of the things when we start talking about it, we're going to kind of not to get off police brutality, I'm going to come back with some things that Lisa shared, but I'm going to come back and share some things that I think if they take the approach, it might be a plus to move us in the right direction dealing with these police violence, police brutality, police departments, law enforcement, because I have to put them all in the same category because it happened in the sheriff department. Down, at least I know for sure, down in South Florida, in Broward County, the most powerful law enforcement officer down there is the sheriff. You know, the sheriff is, he's the man. He's over all of those counties, all of those cities that's in Broward County. Yes, we have, they got police, you know, officers, but the sheriff, so we don't want to exclude the sheriff. We don't want to exclude any law enforcement person. So we have to keep that in mind. This is what's coming in as a means for correcting, not just for the police. It's for all law enforcement. In mind that another thing is communication, too, as well. It's going to be so important. I think that's where we fell short, and we're going to move to the protesters of 2020. One of the things, the reason we are protesting is that it's only been one side of communication. And I think that's the most important thing that needs to be heard. The masses of individuals out there protesting, and I want us to be realistic. You probably look at their age from 18 to 25. And a lot of times we exclude them from being a part of a lot of decision making. So they voicing their opinion now by being out there as warriors. You got to remember, I know a lot of people that gave money, a lot of people, you know, didn't come out to anything, was kind of, you know, settled down. But they was out the front line, the 17, the 18, the 19, the 20, the 21, 20, they was out there. So their voice needs to be heard. So as I look at the protesters of 2020, yes, we had some youth protesters back in the 60s, but this is a whole new group of individuals because we've been exposed to so much. And our young people were a little bit ahead of the game than they was in the 60s and 70s. You have to keep it in mind because it was just such a tough thing because of the control. In the 60s, you got to remember we had segregation. In the early 70s, when you moved to it, became integration. And since then, we're supposed to be integrated, but we hadn't had three forms of it. And I won't get into that. I talk about it when I talk about education. But I want to just say that's how things happen. But now our young people, so they got to have a voice at the table. They're not protesting just to protest Black Lives Matter. They're protesting to have a voice in how this is going to affect them in the future. So that means their mental state is being charged with something that's different than the way it was in the 60s. And we got to realize we have to give them a voice. We can't just make it all about us because us, we got all the money, or we can put out $100,000 or put down $10 million and say that if, even though they don't have a dime, they the one out here, the warriors. People don't believe that. The young folks are the warriors. You can't exclude them from what we need to do in the future so it'll be bright. Lisa. Exactly.
Like, you know, people are doing marches to advocate, stand up for themselves. They want their voices heard.
Exactly.
And this is how change happens. And what, like, again, you know, now you've got more safety policies in schools because statements were made. And young kids, think about it. Those kids were still in high school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were advocating, you know, for gun, you know, against
gun legislation. Yes, yes, yes. So we can see that it is beginning to trickle down. One thing about young people, we got to remember, we're always going to be, you know, because of the fad or the way they sometimes they do things different. It's one thing about it. They I won't say this in a way, no reflection in anybody, but they're like a pit bull on something. Once they get their teeth in it, they're in it. Because you know what? They have nothing to lose. People got to realize you won't see a lot of individuals that are professional people, a lot of people that's out there, because even during the 60s, those individuals in the that was out protesting, you had a lot of mass of people, but a lot of them did not leave their job because they were afraid they're going to lose their job. It was more the young ones, like John Lewis as a young man, a student at Alabama State University. You had several other people out there just grinding. You know, of course, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King, we know that. But they was young people fighting for the cause. The same cause we're fighting for right now. We for equality. We're fighting, even with the police brutality and violence, we want equality. We don't want to be just picked out to be the one that you take advantage of it, and in some cases, most in a late killing that person. You know, I wanted to share with my one of the co-hosts was telling me, I don't know whether she's still a little shook up about it, but she was over to visit a mom in a neighborhood which is of the majority. And for the people who know what the majority is, they know what the majority is. And she was sitting outside waiting on her mom to come, and it was like Sunday night, last night. She was so nervous. She said she posted, I was so nervous because I just didn't want to be a victim. I didn't want to be police come up, why are you sitting outside in this neighborhood? A sense of what? Profiling. This is an individual, and I was hoping she would come on tonight and share her story about that because she put it on Facebook, so everybody's aware of it. So just the things like the young people, the one, and she's 27. So the point is they don't have a problem marching, but they also have a fear of this as well. So we need to continue with reform. We need to come up with ways to address the problem. Lisa.
And I think, too, people do want to speak out about it. And then there's a fear of speaking out about it because of what could the consequences be or the backlash. Or I also think it's brought up some traumatic things from people's past, this situation. Mm-hmm. Like people are, oh, my gosh, something like this happened to me and I let it go and I shouldn't let it go. And we shouldn't let these things go. I mean, I'll tell you, you know, you look at my profile picture on Facebook, and I have the cutest little boy in the whole world, and his name is Preston. And I've known him since he was in kindergarten. And I'll tell you, Dr. Smith, he's an amazing young man.
Mm-hmm.
He's so spiritual. He's like a wise soul. He embraces the yoga. I learned later on, I think maybe in first grade, I found out he was teaching the kids
mm-hmm.
the yoga.
I remember.
Teaching about, you know, being friends, and, you know, he's just a really unique, great kid, and I made him my yoga ambassador. He's the first one from my program, and I had somebody about 2 years ago say to me, I don't even know where he's from, and they said, why do you have a black kid? And that's exactly how it was said. Why do you have a black kid representing your program? I didn't like lose my school, but I put her in her place, and I said, that kid's got more class, and more sense, and more smart, and more of a heart than you. I was just taken aback. Like, here I am with this great program, and I have this amazing kid, and now I have more kids that represent my program with 6 years now. And he's everybody's friend. But to say something like that.
Exactly.
You don't know him.
Just looking at the color of his skin. Yeah.
Sorry.
Lisa, let me make sure we bring one of our other co-hosts that's on the line. I want to make sure she's able to jump in right here because I know she's full of fire. She's good spirit, good people from the state of South Carolina. None other than my sister, Lisa Vibator Sorority Incorporated. It's Scarlett H. Black. How you doing, Scarlett?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Oh, we're hanging in here. Yeah, we're hanging in here. You know,
we were just talking about the threads of the tiptoes of our hands or tips.
Exactly. And we was talking about the protesters of 2020. In essence, sometimes, you know, I could compare to the 60s because I was somewhere around that time. I was around that time, put it that way. And we was just talking about our young being the ones out there, the warriors on this field of battle to make sure change come about. And we was talking about that, but anything else we talked about, police brutality, if you want to just jump in right now, Lisa also here live as well on this Facebook Live, and you can share your thoughts from there.
Well, I think the protests are really diverse. It is good to see, because back in the 60s, and also I still have the tennis shoes I wore back during that time. I was in ninth grade, I believe, eighth or ninth grade, somewhere along there, when I first started. But as you know, I have been, I really am an engager. I'm engaged in all this stuff, and I'm glad to see it. The protests have been a mixture of all kind of diverse backgrounds, gender, and age. And I think it's good to see. It was unfortunate to see what happened to the man that was knocked to the pavement and bleeding from his head. But he was out there, you know, still protesting, still trying to do his thing. So I think it's been all of this. The majority, of course, are younger, millennials, and that's good to see, because they're going to be the ones that's going to inherit all this. And as I told someone today, you know, movements come and go. We have been in movements. We have seen movements the course of our lifetime, and we, because of our actions, have gotten us down the road. Now it's going to be up to them to take the baton and keep going with it. But let's not lose sight that in all of your intensity and engagement, you still need to have common sense and you need to have wisdom. And that's where why the diversity of age, gender, all of this is so very important. You know, many of us have been there, done that, and give, you know, some real good tips to use, because you can't burn down the entire house. You got to have something standing. And we'll get back to, I'm sure we'll talk about, you know, this defunding. I've been talking about defunding all day, you know, and having dialogues across my social media. But let's be careful, you know, with some of this stuff. You can't burn down the entire house and then try to get a 100,000, a million people try to rebuild it, because everybody's going to have a different take on where to put the window, the doors, and things of this nature. So you got to be careful to make sure that you have that intensity, but make sure you also have common sense and wisdom as guide into doing what we know we have to do. And this is not going to be the last movement. Because by the time, you know, the folks that are out there protesting now get to be where we are, you know, there's going to be other folks coming along that's going to look at another movement. So just know that movements come and go. And at each stage of the movement, of everything that's transpired into the 21st century, it has moved us further down the line. And I can go back and talk about the Sigmas during 1919 and all this kind of stuff if we want to go there. And maybe we'll have to have several parts on this one too. But just know that your history that you're living now is not the only history. There's a lot of history that came before you and came before now to get us further down the road. So don't lose sight of that. You know, it ain't all about what you're doing, it's all about all of us.
Exactly. Awesome, awesome. Now, Lisa, you were saying something?
I don't think this is going to go away so quick. I think people are really genuinely upset and want some form of change. I don't think people are going to just walk away from this. I think until they see some type of a change to go on, I think we're going to keep seeing this for a while. We're going to see people, you know, like I said to you before, either through petitions or protests or, you know, taking this up to the state, you know. I don't think it's going to go away so fast. I think we will see some form of change, and I agree with Scarlett, it's not going to happen overnight. But working together, we can make change happen.
And to add to
right.
that, Charlie, as you were saying, that we have different individual, even age brackets out there protesting. We have to remember, we are the individual now in this age bracket that have the wisdom to help guide the young people so
Correct.
It cannot get away and disappear. And I think that's where we have to make sure we keep in mind, not saying even with Ferguson or any other previous protest march that we have concerning police brutality. And the thing about it, gotten to the point now that we just got tired. You know, we're trying to work to make sure it works in a manner that it can be successful, but individual now just tired. You're going to have to do something, but we have to do something that's going to be sustainable. And we have to have everybody genuine doing this. We have some people, you know, you want to be martyrs, you want to be this, you want to be that, but we're going to have to, I already said it, you know, you just can't just tear down everything, don't even have a foundation to kind of move in, because we got to move beyond this, because as the young people that's out there not going to get to be a person of wisdom, if you don't have a good, strong foundation, we're going to have a lapse or gaps in there, and then we'll be back in the same place as we are now. It's sustainable. There's no question to me about that. It's just that we have to make sure we work together to make sure it's sustainable. We have to be able to communicate as well. And sometimes we're not communicating so everybody can be able to be a part of it, because everybody has a position to be there. Yes.
Right. Well, just like, you know, they threw out very quickly the word defunded. Okay, we need to watch our branding. Because defunding sends one connotation to one segment of the population that we're going to need to bring along, and it sends something else to everybody else. Defunding is almost like, you know, you're throwing everything out, but that's not what, you know, is really meant. So you got to use terminology and words that, you know, really speak to what it is that we're trying to say and do. I kept using the word today, reimagining, re-envisioning. Redirecting, you know,
mm-hmm.
something that, you know, a person can pick up on right then and there, you know, reimagine, re-envision, redirect on how this reform should work. You know, first of all,
exactly.
you need better recruiting for police officers. You know, no lie, you know, I served on a local committee here in my county. And talking about police reform, and that's one of the things that we talked about. You know, if I have worked with someone in my school that I knew when they were young, and followed them through high school, knew what a hothead they were, why in the world would I look up and see him walking through the door carrying a gun on his hip?
Mhm. Yeah.
You know, at 18 and 19 years old.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
That's scary, because I'm thinking like, and you know, in fact, I said to him, I said, who in the world gave you a gun? Oh, Miss Black,
exactly.
You know, you know, but we got to really take a look at this. Who are we hiring? You know, because
exactly.
you're friends with somebody, does that deserve for you to have a gun and carry a gun and call yourself policing other people when you couldn't even police yourself?
Scott, not because y'all
got there. We got to take a look at this recruiting, and then once we get the right ones in there, then do the appropriate training. Make sure that they have more training than what it would be for a barber to get a license in this state, a lot of hours. But for police training.
Got it. Let me cut y'all right there. We have a call on here. We want to make sure we give our callers a chance to
okay.
voice their opinion.
Because I'm on a roll. I ain't gotten to the memory yet.
The last four digits of your telephone number is 0113. You are live. If you want to give your location, your name, you can then offer your comments, expertise, or question.
Yeah. Can you hear me, sir?
Yes, sir. We can hear you pretty good.
All right. Calling out of Michigan. Yeah, I listened to the conversation. I'd like to get you guys' opinion. One of the things I think with the young people, and you talked about the older generation kind of giving them a little bit of guidance on how they should move politically, but I think there's a the elephant in the room is going to be with these young people who are very, very immature in understanding the European-American political system. How are we going to deal with this issue of them seeing all of these young white people out there marching with them and still be able to tell them that you're still living in a race-based society, which you are and you will be after the marches. But all of these young people, they see all of these white people out here marching with them, and I think it's going to disarm them into thinking that some kind of way that now America is moving towards a color-blind political system, which is not the case. What are you guys' opinion on how we will deal with that?
Okay,
good question.
Yeah, good question. Thank you, brother, so much. We want you to make sure you join. Awesome. We got to talk about what you just shared. We're just going to put you on mute just for right now so we can share our thoughts, and we'll pop you back in, okay? That's an awesome question how we're going to be able to convince them or have them to see that they are no longer there. Since we got supporters, individuals out there, we all marching together. Are there going to be that sense of we still going to treat them, well, you're not really a part of my race. You have no reason to fight. You have no reason to be out here. Why are you out here when everything maybe come to really calmness? Is it possible that this can occur? It is possible. That's why I said we got to be able to communicate, and everybody got to be able to have a seat at the table, and those individuals got to be able to share their thoughts as well, meaning those individuals that are Caucasian or Asian or of another race besides being black. Let them be genuine enough to tell you the reason why they are here, instead of us still having an age-old mentality about, you know, cause why you out here, you're not black. But we all are fighting for human rights, and we got to be able to be genuine when we talk to them, and they have to be able to do it too, because it's going to get a point when something may hit directly one of those individuals, and they're going to come and look at that person a little different. I'm not guaranteeing that. I'm just saying that things do happen when we have things going on, then it start coming down, then people begin to go back to the way they were before now. Everybody is good now, but we have some people that will go back to that. But both of y'all can share your thoughts on that as well.
Well, personally, I think that, in fact, it was a really good question. And I think the beauty of what this protest has done, it has opened up the dialogue. You're going to need the reason this thing has gone globally. It has just been the United States of America. It's gone globally. And it's gone into cities within the United States where you thought you would never see Black Lives Matter protest because of the diversity of the protesters. And I think that's a real good thing, because it is about human rights also. It is also about, as these people get older, who are going to be your politicians and those in the local communities, local state, and all the way up. And you need to start forming those relationships now. You need to ask the hard questions of everybody, including blacks too. Why are you in this? It's not just, you know, why those Caucasians are in it, or Asians or other diversities in it. Why are you in it? Because some of us sometimes do not have the right reasons to be in it. You know, are you there because have you done your research on what human rights and Black Lives Matters and the history of all this means? Or are you out there because everybody else was out there? You got to ask those tough questions. And then when the cameras and the real work starts, who's going to be there? Who's going to be there? Because this is going to be a lot of work. Not only do you have to do work and reform of criminal justice, you have educational justice, you have housing justice, you have all these other issues that concerns human rights and Black Lives Matter rights. So it's not just, this is just one phase of it. But this is going to be a long haul. Who's going to be left standing? Who's going to still be there? And as you said, Doc, you need to have the dialogue. You got to have those conversations. And sometimes they're very painful, you know, very painful. But you got to have them if we're going to continue to survive as a democracy. But I'm glad to see the diversity.
Exactly, exactly. And one of the things we really, and Scarlett brought up something very important. We hear the term Black Lives Matter. Now, the question is, exactly how do it matter to you? Now, we have to really, really look at that, because when we're talking this, we're talking about unity of all people. We have to have the education, the dialogue, the communication to make sure that everybody can voice their opinion, then we react from that point. Because for it to be sustainable for a long period of time, because we're going to need it the rest of our days, and till they get to be of the individual wisdom, they're going to have to be able to ask the question and share, you know, find out exactly, regardless, even whether they're Black, whether they're white, Asian, Hispanic, they got to ask what Black lives mean to them. Black lives matter to them. Lisa, can you share your thoughts on it? I had to change Lisa over to volume.
Yeah,
because
I can hardly hear her.
Yeah,
I could
hear
her.
You can hear her now. Here you go. She's about to say it now. Okay. She's fixing her hair. Okay, I'm just kidding. Go ahead on, Lisa. We're gonna send you audio now. We're not the ones. Go ahead, Lisa.
What was the question I missed in transition of transferring over? What was where did I leave you at?
His question
the gentleman's question that was on the phone.
Yeah, the question was in regards to, here we are, we got them black and white, got a lot of whites participating, Hispanics, and the question to have sustainability. He didn't ask this question. I'm ad-libbing a little bit, caller, so keep that in mind so I can make sure she can share her thoughts. How in the world should we be able to, how are we going to address it when it comes to a point when maybe the black kid may look at it, why are you here? Why you want to be a part of this? This don't matter. You ain't black. How do we deal with that? Since we're going to be the ones of wisdom sharing it with them, how they should deal with this at this time, he wants to know, when that question may come up between those young people, what would you think would be the best approach to kind of dealing with that? Yes.
And what the pause on this a second. I think what's happened is, one, everyone's got their own opinion. Two, we don't know everybody's motives for what's going on right now. Like I said to you earlier, I think there's a lot of, between the COVID, the lockdown, a lot of anger. I think a lot of people have had emotions come up from their past or even right now. And you know, for somebody, you know, example, somebody says that to someone who's white, like, why are you here? What does this matter to you? You know, I think the best answers right now for people, I'm here to support. I'm here to be a part of. I want to help. What can I do to help? How can I help you? You know, it's a very sensitive topic. And sometimes when you're trying to be supportive right now, I think things get twisted. Misinformed, you know, yeah, is this people wanting to be on TV and on a TikToks and on this? I mean, there's so many videos, guys. I mean, I had one of my kids show me on TikTok, so then she got opened a thing for me, and I couldn't believe some of the stuff I was seeing. So is this people trying to just claim to fame, or are they genuine? These are very good questions. But I think when we're facing that, it's, how do we answer that? And I think sometimes less is more. The less you say, better off you are. Does that make sense? you know, when you're being confronted with these things, I think it's better to show support. If you really are there in for the long haul, you're going to see who's there. You're going to know who's next to you. You're going to know who's holding your hand, or, well, we can't hold hands right now, but you're going to know who's right there next to you. And I think we'll see that in the next couple weeks. And like I said, I don't believe this is going to go away anytime soon. And we'll see who's here for what, you know, and who's here to support and the follow through and to make these changes. And some people are going to be on board, guys, and you know some people aren't, and we cannot, and I always say this, we cannot change people's thinking. You know, we can't change the thinking, but we'll see in the next few weeks, I think, who's really, you know, there in for it and being supportive and willing to make these changes and willing to take things up to the, you know, get laws passed or get things need to be changed. You know,
exactly.
Let's see what's going to happen. That will come out.
The call-in number is 347-857-4192. Caller, all right. Thank you for calling, and I know I still have you on hold.
Yeah, you want to go back to him and see?
Yes, I want to go back to him because just a couple things I want to throw out, and I think we're kind of saying this, and it might be more important that for those young people to understand it is time to be able to communicate, but in the process, listen. And again,
right.
Find out if individuals are genuine. You have to kind of let them say what they need to say, but they have to be, I don't want us to be walking on eggshells, because if I say what I feel, I might be, you know, backlash. Like I think today I saw something, and Carla, I'm going to come back to you. And it was a young man somewhere up in Minneapolis, and I think he just said he didn't want the funds to be taken away, and he was a Caucasian person. He'd been part of the Black Lives Matter protest, but he said something, and they, all the other individuals, meaning the African-American young people, escorted him out from the, protest, but he'd been there the last 2 or 3 weeks.
That was the mayor of Minneapolis, Jacob Fry. And Mayor Fry is the one who fired the police officers right off the bat that were involved in the murder and, you know, in charge. He fired them immediately. That was the fastest time in the country that's ever happened to police officers. They're wanting to the chair of the president of that of their council is calling for defunding. In other words, she wants to start the entire police department completely over or something to that effect.
Right.
He's not in favor of that.
Yes,
you know,
yes,
and I
yes.
agree with him. And he's a very young man too. And the president of the council is a very young woman. And the bottom line is, he's trying to exercise some type of wisdom and control. Is saying, I don't want to do that, but I do want to see extensive reforms. However, he does not have veto power. So if the council votes to go that direction, he can't put a stop to it. Minneapolis does not give him the veto power to do it. And
okay.
instead of
right.
them, you know, it's always like, you know, we want to be listened to and heard in our complaints and our grievances and our stories. But when someone else that doesn't look like us is trying to give you the same type of thing, then we want to boo them. And it really bothered me. That's because if it hadn't been for him to start this entire process of firing those police officers, do you know where we would be at this point?
Exactly. Let me let the caller jump back in here right now. Caller with a 0113. You want to jump back in and share your thoughts right now again?
Yes, sir. And I appreciate you letting me back in. I know a lot of these programs, the panel just don't like to hear themselves talk, and they don't like to engage the community. So I appreciate that. Let me say this, brother. I appreciate you trying to ad-lib and say what I was trying to say to Miss Lisa. Well, my question was, Miss Lisa, is that with the young African-Americans who this may be their first intro into politics with the protest. And so their knowledge of how you navigate a political system is going to be very limited. So my question was, in a race-based society in which you are in, and I think if any of us on this phone don't think so, then we're very, very confused. Okay. How do you give them the knowledge of, now that they see young white people marching next to them, which they will take that to mean some type of race, we're moving into some type of race neutral era. How do we, I didn't say anybody else, we as black people, help them to understand that you are not moving into some race neutral society, and that the hard work at the local level is still going to be race based. One more quick
question. Exactly.
So it's my history. I was an elected official, so yeah, I just wanted to tell you guys what I was an elected official, and so I'm not talking from a place of, you know, inexperience. let me give you one quick example.
Mm-hmm.
So in some cases where we had citizens get involved in political activity dealing with the police, so they would say, well, the police need more training. Well, to the larger white society, that's right up their alley, because you know what happens? They hire a white firm, give them a $10 million contract to come down and teach an all-white police force in an all-black community how to deal with black folk, and then they're out the door. And so then the black folk who thought that that was what was needed see, damn, we've been had. So I don't want these young people to deal with this we've been had after they go through this protest thinking that we're all one.
Awesome, awesome. Okay, I'm going to give Lisa an opportunity to kind of respond to that. And, again, thank you so much for joining us. And, again, I'm going to put you on mute so we can allow her to get the opportunity to share her thoughts on that as well as ourselves. Okay. Okay, Lisa,
he wants to know more or less how we're going to assess the police. Well, I want to address that part. I want to talk about that really quick. One, I don't think you should just bring just anybody in. I think you have to do continual, you know, police go through training. They go out with other police officers. I think it's more than just, oh, we're going to do an assessment. I think there has to be extensive. And it's not just hiring a firm either. You know, it has to be multitask. And I think, you know, there's a lot of things we can say we can do, but will they help? Like, we don't know. But I think if we don't try to put things in place, like I said earlier, it's not just about sending somebody home. I don't think we're there. I think we have to have discipline. I think when you are training to be a police officer, it's not just a 6 month or nine, I don't know how long their program is. Psychological evaluation, psychiatrist. I think you really have to get intense and hire the appropriate people, whoever that might be. I mean, these are just thoughts and ideas that I have, you know, about what's going on. And because we can't fix this overnight. We have to, it's almost like trial and error, right? We have to see what's going to work and what's not going to work and who's qualified and who's not qualified. But it goes back to my whole, how do you know somebody's racist? How do you know somebody's got so much anger towards somebody because of the color of their skin? We don't know that. And we're not knowing that until it directly happens, right, guys? I mean, we have to unfortunately see these horrible things happening, you know, like that young lady, Breonna Taylor, that never should have happened either. You know, all these different situations, it's almost like it happens and then it's like, oh, what do we do? Oh, we're going to fire this person. It can't just be about firing people or sending home. People need, and it goes back to that, accountability. You have to have more testing, something in place, but the question is, I guess, where I'm a little stuck, in all honesty. How do we know somebody's prejudiced, or how do we know somebody's against, you know, the African American, you know, male, or how do we know this until it's directly happened? And yeah, explaining, you know, and what he was asking, just be honest with your feelings. That is one thing that's very important. If you want to explain to somebody, this is how I feel. You don't understand it. You haven't been in my situation. You haven't been. It's okay to say it nicely and just say, you know, we appreciate you supporting, but you don't really understand totally what's going on. There's ways to communicate with people honestly, you know, and in a respectful manner. Because you know what? We don't know. Many of us, we don't know what it's like. We don't walk down the street. We don't have to tell our kids, you know, this is what you do when you see a police officer. You know, we don't know what it's like. And I know we've all had different things happen to us and we can share stories, but unless you specifically have had something happen, you know, and this is continual. This is not, like I said, this is not new. We have social media and these phones with the video cameras on them now where we can tape things and show exactly what's going on.
Well, I think that one thing that can be done, before you brought the caller on, because I was talking about recruiting and training and monitoring and also licensing.
Yes.
Often, in some departments, I don't know, can't speak for nationwide, but in some, when you become a police officer, you go through whatever hours of training that you need, and you do your little recurring training every once in a while. The caller could probably, since he's been in an elected office, could help us with that.
Right.
And the licensing, you also don't go back for licensing. You just go through that training. But I think that they need to be licensed. I think they need to be going through a recurring licensing.
Like what we do.
Like
yeah.
we do in the school system.
Yeah.
Because you have to
like
go through,
what we do with therapy.
You know, licensing every 5 years. And when I was a licensed professional counselor, I had to go through, as you know, at least the
every
licensing
2 years, yeah.
Every 2 years. You know, so that keeps you current. That keeps you being monitored. Keeps you being seen. Also, you need to go back and look at these those who are policing now. Look at their backgrounds. Look
right.
to see how many have had complaints and grievances filed against them. Look to see how those were handled. You know, the Chauvin had 19 complaints. Three,
mm-hmm.
I think, were
mm-hmm.
actual grievances and everything.
Yeah.
And we know what happened with that. You know, he was still employed. Then we have some who have gone through misconduct, and if they are fired or whatever, they just go to another town or call a buddy in another
right.
city or state, and they're rehired. So we need a national database on who these people are. And the good
mm-hmm.
cops, the good police officers, and there are millions of them. I mean, there are really some good police officers out there.
Mm-hmm.
who are doing what they're supposed to do and really care
right.
about being guardians of the community and come in and do their work every day. You know, some
well,
of them lost
you
their
know,
lives.
Scarlett,
some
I mentioned
lost
that
their
earlier.
Lives, you know, in their positions,
right.
you know. So you got to, they got to help rid their profession of those who are not doing those things. And one way to help do it is get a database going, track these people, know where they are, you know, and this type of thing, and then start weeding those out that really do not need to be carrying a gun on their hip
right.
and policing people. Social media
exactly.
can help a lot now because if they have
yeah.
posted
yes.
things on their social media,
cameras,
you
yeah.
go back and capture that. You know, and that's
well,
what
you know
find
what
out
else,
a
Charlotte,
lot now.
There's a lot of cameras out, too,
mm-hmm.
in the streets, and maybe they need, you know, there was footage I saw with this situation. I watched some video that was occurring before this even happened. You know, we need more video, but I agree with you. And I said this earlier before you came on. I don't believe in just, it's like suspending a kid. I don't believe in just suspending and sending somebody home. I think depending on what is done, there's a consequence to it. And it's, that's it. You know, you
exactly.
pull a gun out, you do this. There's a severe consequence. And I know in other countries, when they hand out severe consequences or you get a DUI or you do something, it is automatic consequence, and that's something we're missing here. You know, it's just, you know, there has to be changes, and there's so many. And, yeah, putting committees together and getting people to work together to write things up to present, you know, at a higher level. You know,
I would be interested to hear from caller if he had to work with any of the police unions, because that's also a big part of the problem. When they have gone through this contractual process, you know, with to protect these police officers, sometimes when the chiefs and those departments are trying to do the right thing, they're up against the police unions who are there.
Yes.
You know, and this Bob Kroll down there in Minneapolis, you know, who was you know, poised to start his stuff. But I'm so glad that the governor has called for a civil rights investigation. So they're going to look into him, too. He needs to go. But I'll be interested in what
the call-in number.
If he has a comment about police unions.
857-4192. Thank you so much, Carla, as well as Lisa. And make sure you give us as we still have a call on, I'm not going to go back to him right quick because a part of his question is so important. And I think we have to kind of realize what may happen in a week or so, in 2 or 3 days, when there will be that question,
right,
when that person turn and look at that other person that is not of the same race and ask them, why are you here? And the thing we have to teach as people with wisdom when we're talking to our young people about when you're out in the war, in the field, I'm saying, in the war zone, you would say, and you got to understand there are other people that is going to be able to join hands to you. But you also got
right.
to use the thought process of, if I ask him that question, I have to respect whatever answer he give me to
right.
see. Because I realize he or she is still out there in the same war that you're in, or on the streets
right.
just like you are protesting. We have to get beyond sometimes not being able just looking at our own color and say, well, you shouldn't be out here because, you know, you're not black. But
right.
we all, it is great to have diversity in our challenges of the world today. It's a worldly thing. It's in the world now.
That's
it's not
right.
just in the United States. So you have to be open enough. And young people, we got to talk with them. We have to take time to share with them. Yeah, you're fighting a cause that's going to change the world, but you also got to be able to communicate, because the key to the Black Lives Matter is all about communication. That's how
that's
young
right.
people want to hear what they're saying. And also, we got to have them, if you want us to hear you, you got to be able to be open up to listen yourself, not only just to us, but to those counterparts or those cohorts who's out there fighting that same battle you fight, regardless of the color of their skin. We have to be able to communicate and talk, then not to challenge them. If they not understand, you as the person asking the question, are you ready to help educate them? Can you educate them? And we got to put that all in the right perspective. We got to be able to communicate. We have to be able to educate, because the question's going to come up, whether you believe it or not. And why are you here, man? You ain't got no reason to be here. And that person going to take a step back, and because he know what they say, he or she say with the reason they are here, you're not going to believe them because you're looking at more at a color of a skin now that they're not black. So the point is,
right.
if they, as young people, we're going to talk with them, we're fighting a good battle. Don't be the one advocating like the general on the hill sending everybody down to go to the war, you know, running to the battle. You got to be able to be a part. The general, the so-called, sending it back, you know, advocating, they got to be able to talk to the young people, let them know. You have to organize. If you notice, someone is organizing enough for these young people to come out only, a lot of times, only in the afternoon or only in the night. It's some organization.
Right.
So if it's somebody of wisdom leading them, talk with them about that phase of it. You're going to have somebody, and there are some people out here that's not the same race that you are. You got to give them an opportunity to say why they are here and be genuine. You be genuine and authentic when you ask that question, and allow them to be genuine and authentic when they give you an answer. It might not
be
the
answer you want to question too.
Exactly. And we should. And that's why I said, understand that what we said is know why you out there too, regardless of what color your skin, and why are you out there? You're out there because you're only black? What is the reason? What is the game plan? What are we going to do? Why are we out here? These are the kind of questions for this to be sustainable. To be sustainable, say it again, we have to answer those questions. But the biggest thing I saw with the young people out there is they want to be heard, and they want to be able to communicate with you and not put them, you pat them on the head, go sit down, little boy, you have nothing to say. Apparently they have something to say because they the one out there on the front line. And let's be real, a lot of us not out on the front line now. So we have to realize it, but they're going to have to be able to communicate, number one, I would say, Carl. They have to be able to communicate and allow each other. And if they're not understanding how communication works, that's where we come in. Communication requires listening as well as talking. And one
and
thing
wisdom.
I always say,
and wisdom.
And the hashtag is, minds communicate for understanding, not communicate to understand. Don't just tell me. If you want, you ask me something, expect me to share something back with you, so you're going to listen to me as well. And I think that's where it's going to have to be. But for the people of wisdom that's guiding them, we have to be ready to share that with them. We don't want to rile them up where they just thirsting to go out and do something wrong. We want them to go out and understand we're out here for a purpose. Why are you out here? We got to ask that question. And if you
and
know
then
why you're
don't
out here,
turn around and call us a coon because, mm-hmm. you know, we're trying to give you guidance and wisdom, but because it's not, you know, maybe New Age or whatever the case may be, it doesn't mean that we don't know and we don't understand. And
exactly.
And the same thing, you don't want someone, you know, insulting and demeaning you. Don't insult and demean anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about acceptance.
Exactly.
You know, I'm accepting you for you. Accept me
exactly.
for me.
Me. Exactly. And we got a lot of things we want to talk about, but we want to get to a plan of action. You know, we see some things happening being addressed with police brutality in regards to, we got federal legislation for the coming in regards to how we're going to deal with this situation with the police department and making it a hate crime to a sense. And those are some things. Then we talk about defunding police department. That's been a big talk now. That's been talked about, and I just want to share some things that I thought, and you can do the same thing, team, because we've got about 10 minutes. I thought, first of all, one of the key things is when we have police brutality, hold these people accountable. I understand the unions going to protect them, but they'll protect them. If there's a situation when you know dead right, you see it, video, let's hold them accountable. I understand charging them with third degree. That way you can walk it up. But you actually saw it. Charge them. I know we want to, so we can make sure we convict them. You know what? And the thing about it, you charge them, the crime fits that individual. The punishment is going to fit. And I just think that we have to let, and that's why everybody was upset, because they had been charged. And then when it was charged, you still got people, you didn't charge all four of them. You only charged one of them. So we got to make sure when they commit, when police violence occur, we got to go for the max. Sometimes we have to push it to the level because we hadn't had time to do anything. The second thing, then you all can jump in here. We got to make sure
say,
that.
I'll stay with that first one. Not only do you hold them accountable, they got police officers and people in any type of institutions like that. You must, and even with education, you got to hold each other accountable.
Exactly.
You know somebody is wrong, you don't stand there in your gut if you see it and know it's wrong, and you don't stand there and just be complicit with it or join in with
yes.
it. You got to be able to be strong enough to say, this is wrong, I'm not doing this. I would have, you know, pushed him off of him. That could have been done.
I know. Several people asked me that. Like, they said, why didn't somebody jump in or jump on his back? But it leads me back to trauma, shock. Maybe they didn't know what to do. Maybe they were scared. You know, that if you look at that guy, I mean, he's very scary looking. You know, I'm trying to figure this out myself.
Which got a guy with the knee on the neck.
I mean, I watched it three times. I cried. It was very disturbing. And I was trying to figure out, well, could somebody have jumped in? Were they scared? What were the other officers?
They were afraid because he was a training officer.
They were,
Ricked his tail right off. I mean, we'd have been fighting out there.
And you know what else, guys? You know what else I think is a problem? Is people are scared to intervene nowadays because who knows who's got a gun on them? You know, I know down here you can carry, but I think people think like that too. Like, well, if I jump in and intervene, but there's other ways that you can intervene. You know, you can, you know, something I know, you know, I'm Jewish, something, you know, I've always been taught and my family's instilled. And I, you know, I went to Jewish school, you know, for about 7 years, you know, we educate. There's actually a museum in Cleveland. If you have a chance to look it up, it's the Maltz Museum. And I went for the first time when I was home in November. And it showed, you know, about racism. They showed things about the Holocaust. There were things in there about Jesse Owens. There were so many different things. And maybe we need to have more of this out there where we're educating. At least we're doing our part. We might not be able to fully change people, but you know, I know for myself and in my program and in my whole career, that's something I hone in on because that's how I was raised. You know, we were, you know, we had family that talked to us and explained things to us, and you know, I think nowadays people aren't talking. They're not discussing these things at home. I think there's so many children that are confused. They don't understand. There's questions unanswered, but we have to keep educating, you know, educate. I took two of my best classes. One was in high school. It was a Holocaust class, and may she rest in peace, Dr. Rubinsky. It was an amazing class. And she took the kids, you know, every year to Germany. You know, she took kids to concentration camps. Maybe we need to be doing more things like that, some more exposure, age appropriately. And then I took a cultural diversity class in college and for my master's. I'll tell you what, it was, we had to write about somebody that was different than us and somebody that we didn't know a lot about. And I'll tell you what, people were crying in the class because they wrote about somebody who was, you know, African-American, someone that was homosexual, like prejudgments. And people were so genuine and so open and so honest. And I guess I look at it like if I keep putting that out there and teaching my kids that, and if we can do more things like this, I know we can hit some people, right? You know, we can.
Exactly.
We can make an impact.
Someone who led
is my
diversity
hope.
Classes. I've led so many diversity classes in my career, and I can tell you, it's a pain. Like I said earlier, it's a painful process. And you don't go through it in one setting. It's a continuous set of steps that you go through and that you continue till you get to the end goal. And even through all of that, some folks are so entrenched in their beliefs and ideas, you will never shake them. I don't care what you do.
I agree.
I got stories about that, too, about this woman that just got up and just went absolutely berserk, but that happens. But if you affect one, you know you've done good. If you affect one, you've done good.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's all we can do. We just have to keep educating.
Exactly.
That's
have to keep on educating
them.
Sure, making sure they understand exactly what's going on. And, you know, we're down about 4 minutes left on our time. You know, that's an hour and a half.
You going to go back to the caller? Is he still there?
Let me see if I can get it back. I see still his line is still open. And as I let the caller know from Michigan that, you know, we have a few minutes and you want to share your thoughts because we want to make sure we're able to give a shout-out to those individuals on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
We had one young lady, she's a member of Zeta Phi Beta Sorority. She said they have a blue code, police. They protect each other.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things because we watch so many shows and everything, we see it happen. All right, Carla, we have a few minutes in, and hopefully we come close, but we're going to have a part two to this. You can share your thoughts in regards to what you like to share as we get ready to close out.
Okay.
All right. Thanks again, brother. I appreciate the sister trying to let me get into the dialogue. I don't know why this brother trying to keep me out of the dialogue. But yeah. I'm gonna let him, I know, sister. I'm gonna let him deal with that. That's unpersonal.
I tried for you.
I know, sister. I know. We'll let the brother deal with it very quickly. In the municipality where I was a commissioner, it was 98% black, 90% white police force. We changed that to a 98% black police force. No shootings, no domestic. We brought the officers into the communities. We helped them buy houses. So we was able to see the brothers and the sisters at the Little League, baseball. They was able to interact with the people, school board. The kids was on athletic things together. And so my point is this. When you have a minority community, there's no damn way you should have a white police force in an all-black community. Now, so I'm not telling you theory. I'm not giving you guys theory. I'm giving you guys what we did, right?
Yeah.
Y'all have a good night.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Have a good night. Be safe.
Good night. Same as well. And before, I want y'all to close it out, but I want to, you know, we got 90 seconds, but these individuals want to get a shout out. I got to give them a shout out now. We have Jennifer Edwards joining us. That's my biological one of my youngest sisters, Denise Stephanie out of Berkeley, California. She's joined us. She's behind the Mass Ministry. We also have Latasha Stevens. She's been up in New York, up at Harlem Hospital. She's from South Carolina, Carla. She's a
wonderful nurse.
She's been in the war zone. Well, we've been up there working. I'll say war zone. We've been up there working hard. Yeah, saving lives. So we got to give her a shout out. Remember, Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, and make sure. And her son also played football. Just signed a scholarship in Mississippi Valley for 2020-21. We have my son, Perrin. Thank you so much. This is my oldest son. He's joining us. Tony Rudolph, member of Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity Incorporated. My son, Perrin, is a member of Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity. He's legacy. Proud of that. Lisa Maria Smith Sherrod, also another one of, I'll call my sons. I taught this young man in the eighth and ninth grade, played football for me. He's now a member of Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity, Artavius Tootie Witt, Marisha Jackson, member of Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity, Terrence Baby Head Gibson, member of Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity, Rolinda Brown, that's my cousin. I can't even get her name. I'm rushing. Karen Anthony, member of Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated. Cunning Sanctified Strong. Strong. Those individuals. We got all those individuals, and I thank you. And we're about to go out because we got 5 seconds. It's been awesome tonight. And you want to say some last word, team? And we'll come back with part two. I'll let you know. Maybe 2 weeks, maybe in a week. We'll get ready because we got to talk about this. So next week we'll come back on Monday, which is won't be 2 weeks, it'll be 1 week, and we're gonna talk some more about what's going on in America. Each one of you share your thoughts as we close it out.
You can go ahead, Lisa, I'll end it.
You wanna end it?
Yeah, I'll end it.
Well, I'm just hoping out of all of this that there is change and that there is good. And I think we need to keep talking about this. And I think we all need to do our part. I always say, you know, I do my part. Everybody's got to do their part and authentically and genuinely. And it's not something that should be brushed under the rug or anything of that nature. And we have to come up with solutions. And I think, we were right in what we were saying, what I think Scarlett mentioned. We need somebody, you know, we need to get people of higher levels or, you know, in Congress or somebody's. We need to put some things together and try to make changes with what's going on. And again, I go back to we can't change the way people think, but we also don't have to allow these people to stay in positions where there is discrimination or there is racism. We don't need to allow that. We need to put a stop to that. And you know what it is? When something like that happens one time, it stays with you. It's not something that ever goes away. People learn to find peace with it, but it's hurtful. And it doesn't ever go away. And I think right now people are really hurting. And I do think a lot of this has been eye-opening to a lot of the younger generation and even the kids I'm working with. Like, it's me trying to process with them. And it's something we need to talk about at home. And, again, we don't have control over this, what goes on in people's homes. But I hope in my heart always that people are doing the right thing, you know, and teaching and educating. And that's what I'm going to keep doing, guys, every day private practice, my personal life, and through the yoga program. You know, we don't tolerate that. And the first thing I talk about in every single one of my classes is respect. Respect, respect, respect. Very important. So
Very quickly,
just thanks to our listening audience. Thanks for the gentleman, Mr. Michigan, for calling in. That was a very thought-provoking question and dialogue with you. We appreciate that. So thank you, and thanks again to our listening audience. Thanks to all our members of our Divine Nine who are consistent listeners on this show.
Yeah.
And we appreciate that because collectively it's going to take all of us to also continue to make a difference in the lives of our communities and in working with the protesters, these young millennials who are out there marching and protesting to make it better. It's going to be painful, and dialogues need to be had with each other. And for those who are going to be in it for the long haul, get with folks who will help you with strategic planning, and also can give you the wisdom and guidance that you're going to need to move forward, because this is not going to be easy. And this is just the first, this is just step one, dealing with criminal justice and from what happened in Minneapolis. But you have other phases that we got to go through, too, with the education system all down the line, where injustice happens and racism happens at every level, including those those that work in the corporate and business community. It's there. And I know Dr. Smith and I can tell you stories about that. I'm writing a book. But anyway, we thank you, and join us again. We're going to do it next week, you said.
Yeah.
Coming back next month. Yeah, next week.
Next Monday. Okay, so we're going to continue on because these are some hot topics now. And remember, if you have not registered to vote, vote. You can protest all you want to. You can run off the mouth all you want to. But if you're not putting your name on the dotted line to vote, to try to move America, you're just marching.
Exactly.
Oh, God bless you, Scarlett.
Each and every one of you all, and thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, team, for being a part. And we're going to get the rest of the team in here next week, and we're going to make it do what it do. Hashtag communicate by understanding. Hashtag stay at home and stay alive. Hashtag keep on grinding. And last but not least, you know, change is coming. We got to keep it in mind. It's going to come. Regardless what you think, it's going to happen. But I'm going to say this, and we don't own the rights to this song, because change is going to come. I love you. It ain't a thing you can do about it. Have an awesome night, and we'll talk with you Wednesday night with our sports show and Thursday night with our Love Cafe.
I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long, long.